This is the Historians Podcast. I'm Bob Cudmore. It's a pleasure to welcome Samuel Sam Marquis to the program. Sam Marquis, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Bob.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on to talk about Blackbeard the pirate. But why don't we bring up one of your bona fides, or whatever you want to say, in connection with writing about pirates. You're descended from a pirate?
Yeah, I'm the ninth great-grandson of Captain William Kidd, who was a privateer who actually turned pirate, somewhat like Blackbeard, actually.
What is the difference?
Well, a privateer is a legally sanctioned, basically a legally sanctioned pirate by a government. So, you know, Captain Kidd and Blackbeard were originally, you know, sanctioned as privateers by the British government. So every government had privateers, you know, during times of war, and you know when there weren't wars going on, obviously, then that's when privateers sometimes turned to piracy.
Is this your first? By the way, his new book is called Blackbeard: The Birth of America, published by Mountain Sopris Publishing this year. But is this your first book about pirates?
Yeah, my agent years ago wanted me to do a pirate book because I told her I was the descendant from Blackbeard, and so I kind of put it off because I was busy doing World War II and espionage thrillers, and then I finally got to it when I was in Ocracoke Island this summer, which I go to frequently, which is where Blackbeard fought his last battle. I was with my wife looking out where Blackbeard had fought, you know, on his ship in 1718, and I said, "Oh, it's the 300th anniversary of Blackbeard's death. I've been putting this book off for years. Should I do it?" She's like, "You better get it done."
Yes.
So I got, you know, jumped right into it and kind of put off the World War II thriller I was working on, which is my next book, and got it done.
Okay. And again, the book is called Blackbeard, The Birth of America. I hate to say it, sounds like a bit of a stretch, The Birth of America and Blackbeard.
No, it's actually Blackbeard. The interesting thing is that the last 10 to 15 years of research has really illuminated the true Edward Thatch, who grew up in Spanish Town, Jamaica, and sort of brought into, you know, more clarity exactly where Blackbeard fits into colonial America. So he really, there were stirrings of revolutionary forces in America, you know, by the turn of the century. So in 1700 and going on from that point forward, there was a lot of friction between colonists and the British crown. And Blackbeard, his main thrust was, you know, piracy to, you know, for the profit motive, of course, but he was really out to get at the 1% of his day and to attack the British crown. Mm-hmm. And so he was really an incipient American patriot. And a lot of researchers, Bayliss Brooks, for instance, in his new interpretation of Blackbeard, and he's the one to give him credit, who uncovered a lot of the Jamaican origin of Blackbeard, is really shown that Blackbeard was kind of an incipient American patriot to a large extent.
Hmm. Now, was Edward Thatch born in Jamaica?
No, he's records indicate that he was most likely born near Bristol, in England, and came over at a young age to Jamaica, and that's how I set it up throughout the book.
Mm-hmm. And again, this book is a work of historic fiction, but you've done a lot of work on Edward Thatch's life, Blackbeard the pirate. How did he get to be called Blackbeard?
Well, that's an interesting story. He really wasn't called Blackbeard until probably 1717. And it just started when he raided along the East Coast, up and down the Virginia, Chesapeake Bay area, in the fall of 1717. And it was really then that he got this reputation, because he really pillaged all along that seashore, and also freed some indentured servants and set them adrift in a boat too. And so he was kind of built up his reputation then. And then when he went back and he acquired the Queen Anne's Revenge, which was a French, giant French slaver called La Concorde, which he took in the late fall of 1717, by then he was being called Blackbeard.
Because he has a black beard.
Well, he had a long, yes, sure, I didn't get to that. He had a very long black beard. You know, the description of Blackbeard is he was a tall, spare man with a black beard, which he grew very long.
Mm.
That's the only detailed description that we have of Blackbeard. And it was by a captain that he had taken, that he had taken his vessel from.
How did he get into the pirate or privateer business?
Well, you know, some of that is not precisely known. So we're kind of having to reconstruct based on, sparse records, sparse colonial records, and really, you know, the testimonies of the ship captains of the vessels that he took. But the most people conclude, and he definitely has ties to the Florida wrecks, which took place in the fall of, the summer, August of 1715. There was the Spanish galleon treasure fleet that sunk off the coast of Florida near San Sebastian Inlet.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, these 10 galleons sunk with, you know, an estimated, you know, over $1 billion of silver, Spanish pieces of eight, and a lot of other, you know, valuables, plummeted into the water, into depths of like 8 feet to 25 feet.
Oh.
Along the shoreline. So people, that basically started a frenzy of out-of-work seamen, because the War of Spanish Succession had ended in 1713. And really, by the time the privateers found out about it, it was really more like 1714. So they were freshly out of work and looking for something. And all of a sudden, there's this $1 billion worth of, you know, Spanish treasure off the Florida coast. And then tons of mariners flocked there, and that's where they think Blackbeard probably was legally sanctioned by the Jamaican government and had his own ship at that point, but was not well known because it was a legally sanctioned privateer. And he went to those Spanish wrecks, fished those as much as he could, and then he eventually, probably early 1716, made his way to Nassau, which at that point was becoming a Deadwood type pirate, you know, Republic of Pirates.
Nassau, you mean in the Bahamas?
Yeah, Nassau, Bahamas.
And he linked up with another pirate, or with a more experienced pirate? What do you think of that story? I gather some don't think it was, some say that this other pirate trained him in piracy.
Yeah, that's the traditional thinking was, Blackbeard actually kept a low profile early on in 17, you know, probably late 1715 and throughout, you know, much of 1716. So because people didn't know who he was, because he was most likely legally sanctioned, and he wasn't actually disrupting commerce, they've always lumped him with Benjamin Hornigold, who was a more senior captain, who was an older captain, but not necessarily more experienced captain. So the modern interpretation is really that Thatch didn't need Hornigold to train him, because he came from the British Royal Navy, and now we have, you know, Bayliss Brooks and others, and Arnie Bielachewski and others have sort of demonstrated that Thatch really was on his own by the spring of 1716 and didn't need Hornigold. However, having said that, they definitely worked in tandem as equal partners.
Mm-hmm. And Edward Thatch, Blackbeard, he starts boarding ships, you know, laden with treasure and so forth, and taking the stuff? I mean, is that what he started to do?
Yeah, I'd say. But, you know, he made the transition from the Spanish wrecks, which once they got fished out, you know, the Spanish recovered a lot of the treasure, and then it was taken in an expedition by Jennings, who came out of Jamaica. And so they just basically forcibly took it from the Spanish along the shoreline. And then a lot of it was still fished during 1716, and even into 1717, people were still going to try and they still find pieces of eight there today. So they're still finding some of that treasure. But basically, at that point, he went to Nassau, probably in early 1716, because we know for sure by December 1716, he had his own vessel and was working in tandem with Hornigold. So he had to have had months to become a full pirate captain before that event. So really, by the spring of 1716, and definitely by the summer of 1716, he was, on his way to being Blackbeard the Pirate, mostly taking English prizes because they wanted to try not to get caught. So they were somewhat loyal to the British crown. Like Hornigold was very loyal to and taking only French and Dutch and, and Spanish prizes originally.
But I thought you just said that Thatch was taking British prizes.
Well, what I'm saying is that Hornigold and Thatch early on, and Hornigold definitely, was trying to be mostly take non-British prizes.
Right.
So he was trying so that he would not get in trouble. But at some point, the pirates realized that, well, it doesn't matter. They were still going to be hunted down anyway. So so Thatch originally, probably was taking more French and Spanish prizes than anything else, and then eventually, was taking everything equally.
Okay. And you mentioned this already, that one of his best-known ships was the Queen Anne's Revenge, which was a French merchant vessel that he and his pirates captured. But why Queen Anne's Revenge? Is that a knock on the British? It sounds sort of supporting to me that Queen Anne's
getting... Go ahead. There's a little dichotomy going on with the pirates in that they did not support King George, who was a German...
Right.
Imposter king in the eyes of many of the pirates who were Jacobites. So they supported the Stuart line, mm-hmm. which was, sort of the Catholic line from Scotland, Mary Stuart and that line that basically when Queen Anne died in 1713, towards the end of the war, basically the pirates were loyal to the Stuart line and didn't believe that King George I was the rightful heir to the throne, and he took over in around, 1715 or 16, right around that time period, right when Queen Anne, he took over after mm-hmm, Queen Anne died.
Right.
He didn't speak any Brit, he didn't speak English at all. And so they kind of viewed him as an imposter, and so they were called Jacobites.
Okay.
So Blackbeard fell, and Stede Bonnet, who's also in my book, both fell under that. Where they supported the British crown. I mean, they didn't support the British crown and the elite, but they still were sort of loyal to Britain in their own way, the pirates.
All right.
But they weren't loyal to King George.
Sam Marquis joins us, author of Blackbeard, The Birth of America, Mount Sopris Publishing. It's out this year. It's an historical novel. We have many more tales from Sam, and we'll continue in just a moment. On the Historians Podcast, we depend on your support for the Historians Podcast. You can go to a GoFundMe site, GoFundMe.com/Historians2018, and make a contribution. We really appreciate those contributions. If you don't want to give online, you can send me a check made out to Bob Cudmore. Send to 125 Horseman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. Or what the heck, you can throw in a doubloon and send it to us, and maybe I'll be able to cash it in and so forth. Let me ask you about this, Sam Marquis. I'm starting to wax a little bit silly on the matter of piracy. Is that a problem for you? I mean, this is a serious book, but there's the Disney Pirates of the Caribbean and everybody going arg, arg, and so forth.
Yeah, I think my objective in this book is to try and get pirates and Blackbeard right, and also put them in their proper place within the colonial, anti-crown and sort of pre-revolutionary position where they rightfully belong. So I try to, 90% of the scenes in the book are straight, historical scenes that we know occurred where either Blackbeard or one of the other characters were present. Now I have to fill in a little bit because we don't know where Blackbeard was at every point in time. And I also kind of wanted to recreate his love interest, Margaret of Marcus Hook, who is an actual historical figure that lived in outside Philadelphia that he was in love with.
Mm.
So, I think for me, I want to be historically accurate. It's really a history book written as historical fiction.
Let me ask you about what Thatch, Blackbeard, did to, I believe, to what the present-day Charleston, South Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
What did he do there?
Well, there he basically held the town ransom for medical supplies, and he also took, you know, raided, 10 other ships as they were entering the port. So he sort of held Charleston hostage in 1718, the spring of 1718. And one of the things is that's been discovered on the Queen Anne's Revenge ship is urethral syringes for mercury injection to try and help with syphilis. But of course, injecting mercury really would probably just give you a slow death. It might take some of the temporary symptoms away. But apparently some portion of his crew had syphilis then, which was obviously a problem, among both merchant seamen and pirates, during that time.
So he was, taking the medical supplies from Charleston? Or?
Yeah, he held hostage a prominent citizen named Samuel Ragg, W-R-A-G-G, and others. And he said, I'm going to hold these captive till you bring the medicine. And, of course, unfortunately, he sent two guys off to do it. The storm came up. They got, they were stranded on an island, and they had to be picked up by fishermen, and it ended up taking like 3 or 4 days, even though they were out at the Charleston Bar only, a couple of miles offshore or a couple of miles from town. It still had this big, difficult thing to get the medicine. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he threatened, Blackbeard, I don't want to give anything away with him, but he's been, called a cutthroat villain who killed a number of people. He never killed anyone till the day he was fighting for his life on Ocracoke Island. And so he held these people hostage to try and get medical supplies for his crew. So, here's Blackbeard looking out for his crew and putting them first and foremost.
What about Blackbeard and slavery, if you will? I mean, did he capture or use slave ships? And did he have African Americans on his among his crew members?
Yeah, that's a good point, because there's a Blackbeard, of course, captured the La Concorde, which was a French slave vessel that had more than over 400 slaves on board that was coming from France, but it had a lot of disease and amongst the crew and the slaves, and so they were sort of decimated and very vulnerable. And then Blackbeard took that, giant slaver, which really normally would have had, like 25 cannon or so, but was down to like 10 and didn't have a crew that could actually defend itself very well. So he took that slave ship, converted it into the Queen Anne's Revenge, and renamed it Queen Anne's Revenge to show his Jacobite sympathies. And he ended up taking about 160-something slaves, many of whom he converted into crew members. So he liberated and gave freedom to some portion of the slaves from that vessel and that we know of. And during the course over the next several months, on his way back up to Charlestown, and then when he crashed the Queen Anne's Revenge, off the North Carolina coast, he was having a number of slaves that were actually kept in his hold, but likely unchained, and also a number that he had made crew members.
Okay.
And he ended up selling 60 of the slaves in Bathtown in the summer of 1718. But when he fought his last battle on Ocracoke Island, I hate to give away part of the book, but
right.
He had 30% black men among his crew members.
And he was, Blackbeard, was killed in that last battle?
Yes, Blackbeard fought against Lieutenant Maynard of the British Royal Navy and was hunted down by Alexander Spotswood, who was the governor of Virginia, who was, obsessed with trying to get Blackbeard.
Mm. And you say when he capped, you say he never, until that last battle, he had never killed a man in his exploits. What did he do with the, you mean he would let the crew of a captured ship go, or
Blackbeard not only would let he would always invariably give them a ship to take, sometimes just the longboat, very rarely, but only if the captain had put up resistance or had done, you know, something that was that, you know, where they didn't just submit to the pirates. So he always gave them his probably his worst vessel if they had a vessel worth taking, but other times he just turned them loose and set them free.
No.
So he never sent them off, you know, to an island, you know, maroon them on an island or anything like that, or set them off in a boat that was going to be sinking. He always gave them plenty of food, plenty of water, and plenty of provisions. So, for instance, when he took the French slave ship, La Concorde, he gave them, you know, hundreds or if not thousands of pounds of beans and rice to keep the slaves that the French still retained alive. And so he always made sure that, and sometimes he'd even give notes of payment for things.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a pirate ship, how do you keep order? I mean, is that an issue for pirates? You know what I mean? Like the Navy's got a chain of command. I mean, how did this work?
Well, it's a different. It does. Blackbeard was an unusually powerful pirate because the pirate articles or the pirate code, as it's kind of described in the Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, was a very egalitarian system where the captain really only got two times. Maybe sometimes in extreme cases, three times what the other crew members got. And the quartermaster would get, you know, usually one and one and a half or one and three quarter shares. And, you know, some of the other key first mates, some of the other things would get like, you know, one and a quarter shares. And then then all the seamen would get, you know, one share. So he was in a position where it was an equality-based system that had built-in healthcare system because they took care of their own. Which wasn't happening in colonial America or Britain or Europe at that time. So pirates were really ahead of the times in terms of taking care of their sick, having equal pay for everyone, and for having their captains not have, you know, 10,000 times what our modern CEOs would get of their average workers, but would only get two times. That's how they maintained order. That's why they were such disciplined system, much better than the Navy. The Navy was a brutal system. That's why a lot of seamen became pirates, because they were abused. Sometimes they didn't get paid. Sometimes they'd be kidnapped and put aboard a ship, you know. And so really, the pirate system actually worked quite well and was a very egalitarian system.
I do remember, this may be somewhat later in the century, one of my favorites in literature, Samuel Johnson said he would rather be in jail than in the British Navy, because in the Navy you had all the perils of being in jail with the additional one of being drowned.
Yeah. I think also just a low pay. And they were brutal, you know. You know, you might get a cup of water and get, you know, 10 lashings from a brutal captain, because it was a capitalistic, you know, system where, you know, the merchants profited and they had the captain there as the whipmaster to get their profits. The pirates had a social-based network where everyone was, for the most part, equal, and a captain could be removed at any time. So he wanted to please his crew. Having said that, though, Blackbeard was unusually powerful. He never was threatened, you know, until the very end of his career when he downsized his crew from, you know, from over 300 down to, you know, like 40 crew members. Basically, he was very powerful and held, you know, because he was very popular. He was a great captain. He was a great seaman, and he was widely respected, and he was very successful, and he was also... You know, he was a brilliant tactician, but he was also just generous with his men. He was out there trying to get them medical supplies. He was taking black men and making them pirates and not, you know, seamen instead of slaves. So he was very popular.
Why did he downsize his crew?
Well, that's one of those things that history has some different interpretations. But basically in May of 1717, he ran aground most historians believe he deliberately ran the Queen Anne's Revenge aground, because at that point the crew had become too large and unmanageable, and it was hard to sustain, the piracy. At that point, he had four vessels and probably close to 350 men, and I think it was a big strain on him. At his peak, he had five vessels and 700 men.
Hmm.
And so he, off Beaufort Inlet, North Carolina, he ran aground the Queen Anne's Revenge and another vessel, and then he created this whole scene where he went off with one ship and got the other crews, either left part of the crew, and sent another to get a royal pardon from the governor of North Carolina, who was Governor Eden.
Okay.
And then, so there, you know, people think that he downsized at that point just because the crew was becoming too large and unwieldy, and there wasn't enough money to go around for everyone. Plus, the most important thing is that's when he went to get his pardon from Governor Eden, and I think he saw the end of his career, and he was trying to quit. He basically was retiring at that point.
Mm. But the forces of, was that governor from Virginia sending the forces that attacked him?
Yeah, and Governor Spotswood, we haven't talked about him yet, but he's very important in the Blackwood narrative because Governor Spotswood illegally hunted down Blackbeard, and he marshaled a lot of forces. He was a corrupt governor of Virginia. So at the time of his death, he was the richest man, one of the richest men in colonial America and the richest man in Virginia from land acquisitions that he had gotten to benefit himself. So in the modern world, he would be a completely corrupt politician. So now he was an aggressive guy and very smart and clever, but he was, you know, in pursuit of Blackbeard for, you know, 6 months and created kind of a fiction that Blackbeard was actually committing piracy. Blackbeard, in the spring of 1717, didn't commit any acts of piracy except for when he went to Philadelphia to see Margaret of Marcus Hook, his love. I think some historians, including Kevin Duffus, who's a great Blackbeard historian, that believes that Blackbeard at that point was sort of held accountable by his crew to go take a French vessel because he was going to go down to the Caribbean and try and become a privateer again with the Danish governor on St. Thomas.
You're okay. Descended from Captain Kidd. Did he have offspring? Are there people descended from Blackbeard?
Didn't have anybody that was a descendant that I know of.
Okay.
So I don't know if there are any Blackbeard descendants, but according to what I've read.
All right.
Because he was never married.
Samuel Marquis, a fascinating conversation. His book is called Blackbeard, The Birth of America, published by Mount Sopris Publishing. It's out this year. Thank you for joining us, Sam.
Thanks a lot, Bob. I enjoyed it.
Again, Sam Marquis, author of Blackbeard, The Birth of America. You're listening, or you've been listening, to the Historians Podcast. I'm Bob Cudmore.